Washington scurries to find a debt ceiling solution.
While Wall Street yawns for now.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in for Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Monday, July 25th.
Coming up, how the Chinese, the largest sovereign holders of U.S. debt, are looking at the debt ceiling gridlock.
England's wildly popular Colin clock keeps on ticking.
And how would you feel if you couldn't go online for a day? There's new research with answers to that question a little later on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
You're going to hear a lot about Washington gridlock today, about how the two sides are negotiating down to the wire over raising the debt ceiling. Both Democrats and Republicans say investors could start to panic soon. So far, they haven't. So why is it that Washington seems torn up about the issue and Wall Street so blasé? Marketplace New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore is with us now to talk about it. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
Why aren't the markets panicking so far?
Because this is how Washington works. We've seen this before. Everything is slow and it takes forever and it's never been efficient. In fact, the best example is probably back in 1995. In 1993, we actually blew right through the debt ceiling and it didn't get raised again until 1995. We basically just stopped spending. And during that time, when we had that crisis in 95, the markets barely moved. And we're here again.
And that was the government shutdown, right, of 95.
Exactly.
So Wall Street knew that was happening, I should say, and that they were okay with it?
Well, not quite. I mean, this is, let's be honest, this is bonkers, right? So people are still a little incredulous. I talked to Tony Fratto. He's a hardened Washington veteran, a former Treasury official. He's now at Hamilton Place Strategies. And this is what he said about it.
Here we've been able to point to this date on the calendar for a very long time. We have a pretty good idea of what the market reaction will be, and we have a pretty good idea of what the levers for a solution are. And we're still walking into this really dangerous minefield.
So you can see from there that there is a lot of uneasiness that we're still feeling. Yes, the markets aren't reacting yet, but we're not going to have that crutch forever. And when there's a panic, there's a panic. We'll only know when it happens.
Marketplace is Heidi Moore. Heidi, thanks.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in Hong Kong today. Earlier, she told Chinese officials that the U.S. would not default on its debt as negotiations continue in Washington.
Now, China is the world's biggest holder of U.S. debt outside of the Federal Reserve. From Shanghai, Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz has more.
In the near term, the political shenanigans in Washington over the debt ceiling aren't a threat to China. China's central bank should be able to cover any short-term loss. But if the U.S. does default on its debt to China, says economist Arthur Kroeber, it would introduce a new perspective on the U.S. and China.
It would certainly reinforce concerns that the Chinese have had for some time that the U.S. is not a reliable steward of the world economy.
U.S. debt is approaching 100% of its GDP. China's debt is less than 20% of its economy. Almost none of it is owed to foreigners. And this brings up another danger, says Kroeber.
They see these guys in Congress messing around with stuff, and they say, you know, why is it exactly that we want democracy? You know, if this is what democracy means, that you decide not to pay your debts, why is that a good thing?
In the end, says Kroeber, China will continue to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. It doesn't have other investment options. Though a default on U.S. debt to China might mean a switch from lending to the U.S. to lending to countries that'll actually pay China back. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
If a decision can't be reached by August 2nd, the U.S. could be forced to default on some of its debts. Julia Coronado is chief economist for BNP Paribas. She joins us live. Julia, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Julia, the markets are down, but things do seem stable. What effect are the debt talks having?
Well, as you noted, the stock market's off a little bit, although after the run we've had in the last couple of weeks, it's hardly a blip. And we're also seeing interest rates rising, so signaling some less confidence in the federal government. I think probably one of the bigger moves is in gold. Gold is hitting all-time highs yet again, and I think that reflects a sentiment that governments in general lack credibility.
Yeah, the price of oil is down as well this morning, right?
Yes, and that's probably reflecting some economic concerns. And, of course, one of the big questions is what impact does this have on the recovery? And it is true that no matter what's agreed to in Washington, we're losing federal support. And so we have the lack of that boost to the recovery, and it's just yet another headwind facing the U.S. But I think if we avoid a government shutdown, you know, the implications are very gradual and drawn out over time.
Will this debate do any long-term damage to Treasury bills, assuming that they are able to resolve it?
Well, the world is changing, and we're entering an era where the U.S. isn't driving growth, and it isn't the dominant, while the dollar is still the reserve currency. The U.S. economy isn't the centerpiece of the world anymore, and I think this is just one indication of that. It's important, though, that the policymakers retain the credibility and fiscal discipline so that there isn't a more disorderly and damaging reaction, loss of confidence in the U.S. As a place to invest. So it's very important that they begin to take the right decisions.
Julia Coronado is chief economist with BNP Paribas. Thank you, Julia.
It's my pleasure.
Well, as the debate goes on, one place that's been targeted for cuts is federal student aid. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
One plan in the Senate calls for $70 billion in cuts in health, labor, and education spending over 10 years. Financial aid expert Mark Kantrowitz says cutting student loan programs would be short-sighted. Even with defaults, he says the government makes a profit on student loans.
The government earns anywhere from 10 to 20 cents on the dollar for every dollar lent. So while it may reduce the national debt, in the long run, it means less money coming in to the federal government.
But others aren't so sure the government should be in the business of lending money to students. Neil McCluskey is an education analyst with the Cato Institute. He says student aid programs are supposed to make college more affordable.
But there's very good reason to believe that the more the federal government puts into aid, the higher colleges raise prices.
McCluskey says any deal will likely include cuts to the Pell Grant program, which helps low-income students pay for college. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
European markets took a hit today after Moody's took Greece's credit rating down again to just above default status. Research in Motion, the makers of BlackBerry phones, said today they're eliminating 2,000 jobs and replacing their retiring COO.
The numbers, by the way, are at our website, marketplace.org.
And you can find us on Twitter, too. The program is at Marketplace Radio. My Twitter address, by the way, at S. Vanek Smith.
And I'm at Radio Chio.
You got to follow Chio, man. Citigroup is unveiling a new credit card today. It's being marketed as plain vanilla and fee-free, the so-called Simplicity Card. It has no late fees and a single interest rate for all purchases. Sounding pretty good, Steve?
Sounds simple.
Well, not so fast. The interest rate is 17%, which is pretty far above the average.
Yeah.
There are no rewards, and you have to have a really high credit score to qualify.
Well, that sounds simple.
I know. Well, you know, it's a credit card, Steve. You didn't think there wouldn't be at least some kind of catch, did you?
Of course there are.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
The Federal Communications Commission will get new information from AT&T today about its proposed merger with T-Mobile. The $39 billion union would reshape the industry. Marketplace's David Gora has more.
If the merger gets approved, AT&T and one other company, Verizon, would control four-fifths of the U.S. wireless industry. The new AT&T would have about 120 million customers. Craig Aaron heads Free Press, a nonprofit that opposes the deal. He says it puts too much power in too few hands.
It would be like Exxon merging with Shell, Citgo, and two or three others before you'd reach that level of concentration.
Last week, several lawmakers spoke out against the merger, which was announced last spring. Today, AT&T is expected to give the FCC some new data. Rebecca Arbogast is an analyst with Stifel Nicolaus.
The question is, are there enough good things that come out of this merger that you couldn't get some other way to justify allowing that reduction in competition?
AT&T argues it could consolidate, costs would go down, and customers would benefit from a bigger, more powerful network. The company hopes the information it gives the FCC will convince the commissioners that's the case. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And now for a time-honored institution.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 10, 42, and 10 seconds.
Britain's speaking clock is celebrating its 75th anniversary. Why do the Brits still rely on something so antiquated, though? From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The speaking clock has been telling the Brits the time for 75 years, 12 hours, 50 minutes and 45 seconds precisely, and it's still going strong. It still gets 30 million calls a year, earning the phone company BT some $16 million. A bit of a mystery when you can check the precise time for free on your cell phone or computer. But BT's Sian Wynne-Jones says many Brits still have more faith in the speaking clock.
It is the single point of accurate time in the UK. It's accurate to 5/1000ths of a second. It's so accurate that even Big Ben is synchronised by the speaking clock.
The Brits use it most on New Year's Eve, but the need for accuracy may not be the only reason people call the speaking clock. The man whose voice delivered the time for 22 years used to get fan mail. Some people called the service late at night just to hear his calm, reassuring tones. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
British police have been asked to investigate whether News Corporation's James Murdoch gave false testimony last week before Parliament, the latest in a phone hacking scandal that has investors selling a lot of News Corp stock.
Now, the newspaper business in general isn't doing so well in the age of the iPad and internet. James O'Shea oversaw the newsrooms at the Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times during the information revolution. But he says it wasn't the internet that plundered some great American newspapers. It was Wall Street deals. O'Shea is author of The Deal from Hell. Good morning.
Good morning.
What was the role of Wall Street in the plundering, as you say, of newspapers?
Wall Street demanded returns that newspapers delivered for many, many years. But it was unsustainable, and the continued demands put a lot of pressure on people that ran newspapers. Those pressures simply crushed them and made them make a lot of bad decisions.
So what was it like being in management at the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune during this pretty turbulent time in the news business?
It got to the point where all you really did was try to figure out how to do more with less. That's why when Sam Zell came along, a real estate investor with a reputation of having a Midas touch, everybody actually kind of looked at him like a savior because they thought, well, maybe he can figure this out. We sure haven't. Along came the investment bankers, and in this deal, they earned $287 million in fees. That would be enough for me to run the Los Angeles Times newsroom and employ more than 900 journalists for 2 years.
You talk about Wall Street and big moguls who were plundering the great American newspaper, but is that an accurate statement given what the internet did?
They had to deliver these kind of returns, and to deliver those returns, they became over-reliant on advertising, and the internet came along, and it was basically far better advertising vehicle than the newspaper was, and so it put enormous pressures to cut, and it kind of ignited the cycle of decline that we still see today.
I know Tribune is trying to get out of bankruptcy. Can the company succeed given what it has in front of it?
Once they come out, Tribune Company will be owned by banks that don't want to be in the newspaper business. And so they're going to want their money back. And when they want their money back, they have a tendency to cut budgets. So I think it's a pretty daunting future. The papers might be sold to somebody that actually wants to be in the newspaper business, and that'll be the best thing that could happen to them.
James O'Shea, the author of The Deal from Hell, How Moguls and Wall Street Plundered Great American Newspapers. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, the internet is hurting newspapers. Without it, people are apparently hurting. A new consumer research study, Stacey, says 53% of people who went internet-free for one day said they were lonely. 40% described themselves as upset. 4 in 10 said they were upset if they couldn't have the internet for a day.
I think I might fall into that 40%.
Really?
I'm very ashamed to say it, but I check my email like 100 times a day.
Yeah, me too. One participant apparently said it was like having my hand chopped off.
All right. Well, I am not that bad.
That is some pain right there. If you could imagine, my goodness, the internet. Without the internet for a day, it's like your hand being chopped. Anyway.
You should tweet that, Steve.
I think I will. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.